And welcome back to Travel Minded, the podcast. On today's episode, we are joined by Sharifa J, who is a model, presenter, body positive and mental health advocate. On the episode, we discuss how her job has taken her all across the globe, as well as her love for fitness and running. Thank you so much for coming on. I always found that traveling was just great for my soul. It was a great chance to go reset, be able to explore new places, different cultures. And also, I think mentally for me, it was great to have that reset, to be able to get away.
I've been traveling a lot recently, but up until recently, I swear I barely left the house. I mean, the pandemic sort of ruined that for everyone, didn't it? But, you know, also, I didn't really want to leave the house.
Yeah.
The world felt scary, but now the world feels a lot less scary. So I've been out and about and gallivanting around and living my best life.
I love that. Again,
which is good. And, but yeah, so I wonder who's listening right now. And I'm hopefully they'll be able to live vicariously through the travel stories. If they're
exactly.
Not
yeah. So where have you been recently?
So I had a crazy January. 2 weeks ago, I got booked on a job in Tenerife, which was my first sort of international, like good international location. I know you shouldn't compare, like travel is travel and it's great to be away, but sometimes you go on a job and you really do end up in the arse end of nowhere.
Yeah.
People are like, wow, you're going to France. I'm like, yes, I'm going to France. However, this town has no name and I am staying in one of those kind of murder motels.
Yeah.
So sometimes some jobs and some locations are better than others. So I was booked on an amazing job where I went to Tenerife a couple of weeks ago, and it was very last minute, but it was really exciting because I haven't been in the sun for so long. Yeah. And so I was on location shooting there for 5 days. And while I was there, I was then booked on another job. So I had to go straight to Manchester. And then I came back to London for 1 day and, well, 1 or 2 days. And then I had to go straight to France. And then I was there for a couple of days. And then I came back to London again for 2 days odd. And then I went straight to Newcastle to see my sister. And so I've just touched down and it's been
a whirlwind
weeks of all my laundry is just in this big pile and the house is kind of dusty, and Susan, my Christmas tree, has been by herself for most of that time.
Yeah,
and
everything is her company now.
Moldy. But it's good and I feel good, my spirit feels good, I feel inspired. I always feel really inspired by just getting out of my space. So
yeah.
Even if it's, you know, the murder motel in France or whatever it is, I always love changing my state and just being somewhere different, experiencing something new, good or bad. I think it's really positive for us always. So
definitely.
By us, I mean us, everyone, not you.
So when you go away to places as work, are you mainly able to be able to go and explore those places, or does it depend, obviously, how jam-packed the schedule is, how long you're there for?
I've always really tried to tag on some extra time when I go on location jobs, but most of the time it's just car, plane, car, hotel, studio or location, back into a car, back into a plane, back into a car, back into my house. That is pretty much how it tends to go. So when people say, wow, it's so amazing and glamorous that you travel with work, I think there is always a glamorous side to being in a hotel for free, but there is always a kind of like missed opportunity sort of feeling when I remember once shooting on location in New Zealand, and it was just the most beautiful place ever. I was in Queenstown and we had no downtime. And every day, every morning, we'd wake up at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. very early. And the location car would get us and we'd drive all the way up to the top of this mountain. And we'd go past all the amazing scenery. I'd see all the tourists like bungee jumping and like, you know, cheersing because Queenstown is so kind of festive.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't even a festive season, but I remember feeling quite festive. Yeah. Everyone was kind of merry. And I remember sort of driving past all these people, frolicking around. And then there was me, like, getting ready to go to work. And we drove all the way up to the top of this mountain, and I sat on the top of this mountain with no Wi-Fi. I was surrounded by catering, and they didn't need me to work very much. That was good. But I was looking out of, you know, across the view, thinking, I really do wish I could be down there exploring. And yeah. I was pretty much on location for 4 days, so never really saw Queenstown very much.
Definitely add that to your list to be able to go back to and be like, right, I'm going to go back to where they were cheering. Yeah. Would you go and do a bungee jump?
100%.
Yeah.
Actually, the exciting thing is, on the last day, we had, I think, like 4 hours before our planes. And so we did. We all went to do a bungee jump on the last
day.
But we all had to really campaign for it because everyone was like, there's no time. We're going to miss the flight. So we were like, we're doing it. So we all did it. And I ended up bungee jumping. It was terrifying, but amazing. I don't think I'd ever do it again, though, because I did see my life flash before my eyes.
Yeah, I had that with skydiving. I had like the adrenaline where I was like, perfect, I'm going to go do this. I was in the plane, and then I thought, what on earth have I signed myself up for? Why am I doing this? But then before I could commit to even saying to the pilot, there's been a lovely plane ride, can you turn me around? I was already like, the instructor was already throwing us both out, and I was like, and I feel as though like he caught me in a panic, so I kind of took a breath as I fell, which probably isn't ideal when you're like going so fast. But I'm glad I can say that I've done it.
Yeah.
But again, probably not something that's inspired me to do it time and time again.
So you just breathed in like 100 miles an hour wind or something.
Yeah. I'm like, this should be a great experience, but I'm like gasping for breath.
But you did it. You did it.
Definitely, yeah. Have you done any other crazy experiences like that, like zip lining? I don't know what else there is. Scuba diving.
I did some zip lining over a lake, very drunk, which was a really fun experience. And do you know what? It was really unexpected drunk. You know when you're not supposed to be, like, the setting would not be where anyone would ever get drunk. It was an event with Fitbit, you know, the wearable. And, you know, it's like fitness camp, and it was all about like sleep and, you know, everyone enjoy the Fitbits and stuff. And so I turned up and they were like, welcome, you know, here's your Fitbit and here's your glass of champagne.
That's brilliant.
And, me and all the other fitness, like lots of fitness influencers, I'm not a fitness influencer, but I was with all the fitness influencers, were like, well, we're here. So just few too many champagnes later, they were like, right, everyone, zip lining. So that was really fun, and actually ended up being one of the most fun I've ever had on an event before, because they're just such a great team.
Maybe that was their ploy. They were like, they're not going to zip line unless we give them lots of alcohol. Yeah. And also it just means great content.
Exactly. And you know what? It was great content. Because we were like, you know, drunk, but merry drunk. Like, you know, not drunk drunk. We were like fun drunk.
Yeah. And that's always the best kind.
Exactly. And life is all about balance. Health is all about balance anyway, isn't it?
So. Yeah. Well, you say you're not into your fitness, but you do running quite a lot, don't you?
I do. It's really funny. I do run, but I don't know how this has happened to me, but it's become this really strange thing where I feel like everyone thinks all I ever do is running. So I actually might set the record straight here just to try and balance it out. Yes, I love running, and I ran the London Marathon in October for the first time, which I trained for twice because of the pandemic, and that was amazing. And I've ran 2 half marathon like races, I've done a sprint triathlon, I've ran several 10ks.
I haven't done running at all, really.
but the thing is, I love running, but I also love other things too. I'm just I just love movement. I've been practicing yoga for 10 years. I cycled before someone stole my bike.
So I couldn't
buy a new one because of the pandemic. There's a bike crisis right now.
I swim,
I cycle, I love spinning, I love yoga, I love Pilates. Like, I'm just that kind of person, you know, like I'll go rock climbing. I was cold water swimming last week, which was a bit scary, but really fun. Give me like any sort of challenge and I'll just do it. So
yeah,
me no, running is a challenge. Doing this, I find running so hard that I do it because I feel like it helps me to become a stronger person.
Definitely. So when you go on holiday, would you ever do those type of things, or do you enjoy mainly going on holidays where you can just relax?
I definitely, probably going to be an unpopular opinion here, but for me exercise is like leisure.
I get to the weekend,
I can hear myself saying it and I'm like, who is this person? Thing like this, but this has just happened to me in the last few years. I get to the weekend and I'm like, oh, can't wait for the weekend because I'm going to go to yoga, then I'm going to go to spin class, then I'm going to go for a run, then I'm going to go to boxing. And that for me is like leisure. So when I go on holiday, I do try to find a yoga class or go out for like a beach run or something because I enjoy. And if I don't, I feel a bit like, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'll probably be drinking in the evenings.
So at least you feel like you've achieved something other than just drinking.
Exactly. I do find myself slipping into a kind of, you know, feeling just a bit like lethargic and a bit like low energy and not my best self when I'm not moving. So even if I'm like, even if I just go on a really long walk exploring the city, or I'll make sure to kind of leave the house without my GPS on and just go on a 2 or 3 hour walk around and discover things. So that counts as exercise as well.
Definitely. Well, I think that's what it's all about. When you go somewhere and you don't really know public transport, if there is public transport, like it's a nice way to be able to just come across random buildings and be like, oh, that looks really great, and then you look on it on the internet later and you're like, oh, actually the building I passed was a really popular attraction that I just stumbled across. And it's just a great way to see, find restaurants and bump into people that you probably wouldn't necessarily bump into.
Definitely. I like a bit of planned fun. I enjoy an itinerary on a holiday, but I like, you know, I might see this and I might see that, but ultimately it's about discovering something new, isn't it? And I think you can do that if you're like, I would happily go on. I have these little things called discovery runs where you can just kind of leave the house and it doesn't really matter what direction you're going and you're just finding something new. So I would go on a little discovery run in a new place. I find it quite fun to do.
No, I love that. It's brilliant. So where has been your favourite place to travel to?
Where's been my favourite place to travel to? So, okay, a little, I feel a bit embarrassed to tell you this, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
Go for it.
I've only ever been to one place abroad.
Yeah.
On an actual holiday. Everywhere else I've traveled to, I've only ever been there for work, which is amazing because I've traveled the world for work, but also it means that I've spent a lot of time working in these places, so I don't necessarily always experience them, it, like I said earlier, in the same way. But I think my favorite place that I traveled to, it was on a job, it was one of my first ever modeling jobs, and I was shooting a campaign in Turks and Caicos, which is the Caribbean islands. And oh my God, I got off the plane and I was like, where am I? This is paradise. And I'm half Jamaican, half English. I've never been to Jamaica. I don't know my dad is my Jamaican side. So I don't know my Jamaican side of the family. And I did feel like when I got off the plane, there was a sense of feeling like I really belonged there.
Yeah.
A real like, kind of spiritual belonging, like, oh, maybe I'm kind of home. I mean, I don't think I was born in Turks and Caicos, but it felt like more where I was supposed to be. So I had just the most incredible experience. I think it was on my first big job, and it was years ago, and the ocean was so blue and the sand was like perfect. And, you know, I also had an all expenses paid job. So that meant, like, at the time I wasn't a vegan. So every day I was like, lobster. Had the best time, because I think I must have been 21. I was so poor when I was 21. I had no money. I could barely pay my bills. So then to be booked on this job and, you know, get on a plane and fly all the way there to do this big shoot and stay in the gorgeous hotel. And I was like skinny dipping the ocean with all the other models. And it was just one of those memories that I'll always hold very fondly. However, coming back was an absolute nightmare because... I was on an American Airlines plane, which we were flying from Miami to London Heathrow Airport, and somewhere from Miami. Yeah, because we'd flown from Turks and Caicos to Miami and then Miami to London Heathrow. And somewhere in the first 45 minutes-ish of the flight, my plane had, I think it's called a rapid decompression.
Yeah. I don't know what that is, but it sounds dramatic.
Well, when I tell people this story, they're like, do you mean turbulence? No.
It seems much more serious than that.
A rapid decompression where the plane went from like this horizontal to like almost.
Oh, vertical, my goodness.
And just started plummeting down over the ocean. And we had just finished eating our in-flight meal. So all the food, everything... flew up, it would all hit the ceiling. Oh my God, it was terrifying. I think there's an article about it somewhere, or it was in the newspaper or something, but all this, it all hit the ceiling, and everyone was screaming on the plane. Oh my God, it was absolutely horrendous. And in that moment, I thought, this is it, Sharifa. You went on your big, fantastic modeling job. You enjoyed your time in the Caribbean, and now you're going to die. I didn't die, thankfully. I lived, but it was terrifying. And we had to like climb really high up to get out of whatever was causing this. We climbed really high. So you go from like, we went from horizontal to vertical to back up vertical again. I felt like I was on a plane ride. And the plane started climbing really high up. And then we spent, I think it was 2 or 3 hours in the air. We'd lost power in the back of the plane, apparently.
Oh my goodness. And everything was probably just adding to the like panic of everyone. And you were probably all like, as much as it's nice that we've like resolved that we're not like sideways anymore, we would like to just get off this plane.
And the stewards were getting stressed and everyone was getting stressed. It was just awful. It was so awful. And and it kind of reminded me when they were like, we've lost power in the back of the plane. It kind of reminded me of when Phoebe Buffay in Friends says, I don't know if you've seen Friends,
yeah,
which is like, They've something's happened to the left phalange. Like that is what it felt like. I felt like we had no phalange and it was terrible. And yeah, so anyway, it was all a bit of a blur how we got out of there, but we had to make an emergency landing in JFK Airport. So we landed there. There was ambulance there. People had injuries. This woman had fractured the top of her. Or something, maybe not fraction. I don't actually know the ins and outs, but she went off in a neck brace. Everyone was just awful. When the plane landed, we all cheered and like hugged each other. It was like a movie. And then I spent 36 hours trying to get home, and I was walking around JFK, and I'm sorry to everyone at JFK, but it was just the most unfriendly airport ever. And I was so young and I had no money on my credit card. And I kind of stumbled into the British Airways lounge and was like, excuse me, I don't know where I'm going. My plane sort of crashed, but it also didn't crash, and I'm confused. And so the lovely British Airways people came out from behind the desk and said, oh, don't worry, Poppet, come inside. And they sat
with me.
I know. And they let me sit in the first class lounge, and they made me scrambled eggs and salmon. I wasn't a vegan, I'm a vegan now. Gave me a cup of tea, wrapped me in a blanket, gave me a hug. So sweet. Love the good old British. You know, it's like anything goes wrong, as long as you've got a cup of English breakfast tea, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
This is the British way. So yeah, they gave me my English breakfast tea. I was feeling a bit better, but I was terrified to get back on plane because...
Oh yeah, you would.
Yeah, it was awful. So my flight was about to leave and they were calling my name, Sharifa Radford, to the plane. I'm telling this story very badly, by the way. I'm sure I've missed a lot of details. But yeah, Sharifa Radford to the plane. And I said, can I go any other way? Because I don't want to get back on another plane. And they had to walk me in this blanket, like shaking, to the airplane. And they were really nice and they gave me like a whole row to myself, and I pretty much just like laid down and slept for the whole entire flight. I was so terrified to get out of my seat because I kept picturing that scene from, I think it's Castaway, where Tom Hanks goes to the bathroom.
Yeah,
he like comes back. I think that's what happens anyway, or that's how I remembered it, that Tom Hanks went to the loo and he came back and then he was cast away. So in my head, I was like, I can't go to the loo. I can't move. I'm not going to drink water because I don't want to be cast away. So I just sat there in this chair completely still for 8 hours. And then following that, I was just terrified of flying for years, like absolutely years, until I moved to Australia. I don't even know how I managed to get on the plane to Australia because I was so scared of flying.
Were you like, right, I'll be shit 30 days, that's fine.
I actually think the doctor had given me Valium for it.
Yeah.
Because I was so stressed. But anyway, I managed to get on this plane to Australia. And when I got there, I started booking all these modeling jobs. And Australia is huge. So you do fly a lot of places. And I just happened to have clients all over Australia. So every week I was getting on a plane, like back and forth. And it was a good experience, but I was terrified. But I think the exposure therapy helped me to get over my fear of flying. So I now no longer have a fear.
That is good. So how long did you live in Australia for?
I was there for 2 years. I was just there on a visa for work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Would you ever live there?
Well,
permanently.
Yes and no. I think Australia is an amazing country. I love it. And I had the most incredible experiences there. My job went really well over there. The sun is always shining. Unless it's raining. It does rain a lot in Sydney. You do get over your fear of spiders, even though the first time I saw a huntsman spider, I was traumatized, but ultimately it is helpful. Again, exposure therapy. When I was there, I also worked on a farm. So I was there for modeling, but I had to do my farm work for my visa because I was on a working holiday visa. So I did spend some time like picking lemons and tomatoes and melons and packing oranges in Queensland.
How is that? Is it exotic? I imagine like it's probably quite fun for the first couple of weeks. Like when I see people that I know are on farms picking strawberries, I'm like, well, that's quite cool. But I guess after a while, especially in the heat, it's probably not ideal.
It was pretty, I found it pretty traumatizing. I
mean, oh no.
I look back on the experience and I made so many amazing friends, and I'm still friends with them today. And I wouldn't change the experience, but I do think, I mean, it was completely mindless. You would just stand there all day. Like my worst job was packing oranges in Griffith, which is, Griffith is like the absolute arse end of nowhere. Sorry to anyone listening who lives in Griffith. But it's just like, you had to take 9 hours to get a coach from Sydney to there. It's really just a little town with nothing in it, other than a few shops like Best and Less, which are a bit like Primark. And you just stand there all day sorting oranges from a conveyor belt, 8 hours a day.
Now that sounds like a film as well.
Yeah, exactly. Someone needs to make my life into a movie. I don't know why, what's happening. I won't star in it because I'll be reliving the trauma. But, you know, I loved it, but I wouldn't change the experience, but I would never want to do that again. But I think one of the most amazing experiences as part of living in Australia was when I lived in Queensland. I worked on a tomato farm. I woke up at like 4 o'clock every morning to go and pick tomatoes. I'd finished work at sort of midday. I was sleeping in a hut overlooking a lake, and there was you know, just a snake that lived next to my cabin. We had a huntsman spider that was always on the front door of our house. And there was cows and sheep and goats and all these animals just living on the farm. And it was just a different way of living. And it helped me to experience a life in a totally different way, because I've always lived in a city. So yeah. I've never been like in the, you know, in the open outback. So it was amazing. I wouldn't want to do it again. I did struggle a lot in Australia just because it's quite, I think, in terms of inclusivity and acceptance of different races, I've found it was quite racist in my experience. I don't want to tar Australia with the racist brush, because I think what is normal for them is obviously not normal for us. And what's normal for us is not normal for them. For example, we say black here quite normally, whereas they probably wouldn't refer to people as black in the same way. So it's just different. But I did feel and experience a lot of racism when I was there. So for that reason, I probably wouldn't want to live there or raise children. Not yet, but I do think things are developing and progressing, and especially in cities like Melbourne and Sydney, people are a lot more open-minded. So
how do you find inclusivity in other countries that you've been to? Like, do you find that people in this day and age are a bit more accepting, and there is more equality, or do you still again think that there is quite a lot of development depending on kind of where you go?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Like, I haven't traveled to every country in the world, so I don't know the answer to that fully. But just in my experience, I think when I spend time in France, I do definitely feel an energy, and there are sometimes comments that make me feel like, okay, like, I don't think they're quite in the same place we are in London as London. When it comes to inclusivity, but then there's other places where I would go and just no one would bat an eyelid. You know, I spent some time, you know, a couple of days only in Kuala Lumpur. I felt great there. I loved it. Like, you know, it was just chill, and I didn't really feel any energy or wasn't really any sort of comments. I don't know if I can really answer that question. I do think that overall, if you are a minority group, you know, be that like black or ethnic minority, be that LGBTQIA+, I think you do have to be careful and consider where you're traveling to. It's not quite as easy as I'm just going to go there, or I'm just going to go there. Because there are some places, you know, I probably wouldn't go to some parts of America, because I'm sure if I spent some time in some parts of America, I would not be accepted in the same way that my gay friends might go to not be able to travel to some parts of, say, Africa, because they wouldn't be accepted being gay, you know, or even closer to home than that. So I think it's something, and this kind of reminds me of people understanding what white privilege is, because people always, I think some people feel that white privilege is a really, you know, offensive term. Perhaps it means that white people have lots more privilege than other people, but that's not necessarily the case. It just means that if you're a white person, overall, mostly, you probably, and I can't say this for every country, but you probably feel safe to travel to a lot of places and not have to consider your race, or not even have to, wouldn't even come into your mind, oh, maybe people are gonna treat me like this because of how I look. Because, you know, globally, in most places, white people are accepted. Although there is also nuances to that as well. I'm sure there's certain parts of the world where there are less white people, and so they may experience that sort of racism in the same way that we experience it in a white country. But I do think it kind of encapsulates the idea of what white privilege is, and that is probably something that white people wouldn't have to consider, mostly in comparison to minorities, or, you know, or cisgendered people as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure when you experience these type of things when you're on holiday, like, you find that it must knock your confidence, even though you're trying to, you know, you're going somewhere, you're having a even if you're working, it's a, like you said, a motivating experience. It's supposed to be fun, but I'm sure it must knock you. And how does that impact your mental health?
Well, I mean, it's a really good question. I think, to be honest, racism is everywhere.
Yeah.
And even though, even being in London, one of the, you know, cosmopolitans of the world when it comes to race and gender and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Even though I'm here, I still experience racism in London. Not yeah. as much as I do when I leave London. I do experience it. It's much more overt, but I will experience it here as mm-hmm. well. So I think it's, you do learn to train yourself to cope, because it's like experiencing these little microaggressions every day. It's like a small trauma. You learn to cope. And I think over the years, I've learned to empathize with people. I love people. Like I also do some presenting work, and I really love, one of my big passions is interviewing people, because I love learning about people and understanding people. And I think what might feel racist to me may not be intended as racist from the other person. I'm not saying that makes it okay, but it certainly helps me to feel better when certain things happen. Just for example, the other day I was at work and somebody touched my hair, and they moved it, like shuffled it around like this, and they said, well, it was a hairstylist, so they were touching my hair for that reason. Obviously, I just want to clarify that. But I didn't want to give away who it was.
Yeah.
I was trying to make it relevant so it doesn't seem as bad. A hairstylist touched my hair, which they would. They ruffled it around and they said, oh, wow, you don't even need a pillow, do you? Because, I mean, this is basically a pillow. Now, this hairstylist was absolutely lovely. We had a great day together. We got to know each other. You know, all is well. I can imagine this person to me doesn't seem prejudiced or racist in any way. However, that kind of comment I do find a little bit derogatory, a little bit offensive, and just not necessary. I mean, no one would ever go up to a person with straight hair and say, oh, your hair is like, you know, it just doesn't happen. But it does happen to us. So I have to manage my emotions in that moment to react properly. To yeah. my initial reaction would be like, you say what?
Yeah.
listen, get me, like, hold my weed. This is my inner thoughts, but my outside me is like, okay, rationalize this, Sharifa. Is this intended like this? Da, da, da. So I think in the same way that I would deal with it anywhere, I deal with that outside, and also try to remember that just because I live in one way in the UK and some things are acceptable or appropriate here, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the same when you leave. So understanding there are different rules when it comes to different cultures and races. And so when I'm in someone else's country, I have to also try and adapt that and understand that and respect that as well. You know, when I lived in Australia, I got called a wog. Well, a wog is actually an Italian person. So that's what they call Italian people, is wogs, or Greeks, I think. But someone said, oh, are you a wog? Because you've got curly hair. We would understand that to mean like gollywog, right? Like the offensive term. But to them, that's like a term they would use for Greek people. And so it's really about understanding that and understanding the culture and the intention. And I think that kind of feeds back into any conversation around racism, homophobia, prejudice, etc., etc. Yeah. Did that answer your question, or was that really long?
Don't worry. And obviously you're a big advocate as well for kind of body positivity and confidence, and again in a similar way that must also, like you said, you know, you're going to different places and I'm sure you probably get in that mindset where you're like, all right, some people are going to behave in a certain way and others aren't even going to bat an eyelid. So do you deal with that in the same kind of, in a similar way as well,
with like body confidence?
Yeah, like I think body confidence is such a big thing for anyone to feel comfortable to go away to places, especially if you're having to be in a bikini or you're going to have to be put into, especially within your job, you're probably maybe being asked to maybe wear certain clothes, like, and kind of finding that confidence to be like, okay, I'm just going to embrace it. I think it's something which, especially in this day and age with social media, is such a, there's always this image of what should be a perfect image, and it's really not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense.
it definitely makes sense. And it's such a great and important question, I think. I'm trying to figure out the answer for that, to be honest. But all I know is that, okay, when I was in Tenerife last week, and, you know, it's January, I have naturally put on the holiday weight. I think
we all have.
It gets to Christmas and you're like, okay, it's gin o'clock. I mean, that's what I do anyway. Yeah. Either mulled wine o'clock, gin o'clock, or time for a pie.
And it's every day.
Because it's Christmas, right? So naturally, I think we're all coming out of Christmas feeling a little bit in, like, overindulged, a little bit, you know, like, ooh, okay. And as much as I'm an advocate for body confidence, I still have a body, I still have my own insecurities, and I was feeling probably a bit holiday weight heavy on the holiday, where my clothes were a little bit tighter than they normally are. When my clothes feel tight, I actually don't mind how I look. If I've gained weight, then I've gained weight, that's fine. If I've lost weight, then I've lost weight, that's fine as well. I try not to put too much, I try not to give it too much power, because your body will change. That is just life. Bodies change, they're designed to change. I've said this before, I'll say it again. We go from tiny babies to old people throughout the duration of our lives. And if we weren't designed to evolve, we'd all be like Benjamin Button. We're not aging backwards. Yeah. So I do try to embrace when I see, if I see a new stretch mark or something, I'm like, okay, it's new.
Yeah.
It's there. I have an emotion about it. I'm not going to get too hung up on it. But when my clothes feel tight, I think that's more of a comfort thing, isn't it? So I was really sort of walking around feeling a little bit heavier, feeling a little bit like tight, a little bit uncomfortable. And it did cross my mind that I'm like, is it in my head that people are kind of looking at me a bit funny? But I did notice that people were looking a lot smaller bodied than me around. And there was a moment of like, oh, maybe I'm a bit different. Maybe people are thinking X, Y, and Z about me. But I always try to remind myself. There's a very famous painting. I forget actually what it's called, but I think it's of, it's a painting of, I want to say Narcissus drowning in a lake.
Yeah.
I might have this wrong. Oh, if I have this wrong, this is a terrible story. But if I have this right, this is a great story, and I'm literally a philosopher. but there's a very famous painting of, let's just say, a man drowning in a lake. Famous. I think he's a god or something, drowning in a lake. And there's all the village people are sort of like going around doing their business. And there he is, like, drowning in this lake. And the idea of the picture is that most of the time, as much as you might think people are paying attention to you, they're actually not.
Yeah.
You could be drowning in a lake. No one's even going to notice, because everyone is so busy focusing on what they're doing, their own lives, their own.
Exactly.
What am I going to have for lunch? What about that email? Oh, my boyfriend broke up with me. I'm sad. You know, they, even if in that fleeting moment that they thought, oh, she has put on weight, or she looks a bit like this, even if they did think that, which most of the time they're not, they're only going to think about it for a second. And most likely they don't care.
Yeah.
Really don't care. They're not looking at you. People don't live there. In the same way you're thinking about you all the time, they're not thinking about you. They're thinking about them. So I try to remind myself of that. Like, I'm walking along this street in Tenerife, thinking, oh, holiday weight, feeling a bit tight, had too many pies. But then I'm just realizing, do you know what? They don't care. And if they don't care, I shouldn't care. And obviously I'm very much of the mindset that it's absolutely, I am very anti-diet culture, but I'm also like, if you want to change your body, change your body. If it makes you feel better, change your body, but do it for the right reasons. So for me, I was like, oh, just make sure to move a little bit more, you know, watch what I'm eating a tiny bit more, not in a diet culture way. I'm not going to like ditch bread forever or anything, but maybe a few more veggies, bit less gin. Yeah. Got myself healthier. So you can obviously use that as a learning experience for yourself, but don't ruin your holiday.
Yeah.
Get like, and I guarantee once you strip off and you get in your bikini and you're baking in the sun, yeah, and you are like 7 million shades darker, so dramatic. you are like the person you've always wanted to be, so tan and so sexy. You're going to forget all those insecurities,
exactly,
out the window, because no one's looking at you, no one cares, but you will regret that holiday you went on where you came home with no tan and didn't take off the shorts,
yeah,
or didn't wear the shorts or any of those things, because you are doing yourself a disservice there, I think. Definitely. So
I think, yeah, that was really nicely put. Yeah. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on. My last question I have is, where is on your bucket list, if you have any places?
Okay, so I have loads of places, and I'm thinking about getting a scratch map. You know,
I have one of those. Yeah, they're really good. Okay. Although, okay, I'm really bad, and my parents think that this isn't the way that you should do it. But with a scratch map, I'm like, well, I've been to a tiny bit of that country, so I'm gonna obviously scratch up the whole country. Otherwise, it'll take you forever.
Yeah.
Who knows when you're ever gonna complete it? So I'm like, perfect, whole of Europe. No.
Yeah, so yeah, you have to only scratch off the tiny little bit. Yeah. I mean, it will feel sad that ultimately we'd probably never be able to complete it.
Yeah.
So, but you know, c'est la vie. I have a couple of plans. I'm half Jamaican, as I said earlier. I've never been to Jamaica. I think it's gonna be, I don't know when I'm gonna go or how I'm gonna do it, but I feel like when I do go, it's gonna be a very important, like, spiritual journey for me to kind of go to the place of the, you know, my roots, and discover that a bit. So I want to have enough time to experience. I don't want to just go, I'm going to Jamaica for a week. I actually want to be able to go there and, yeah, really experience and turn off my phone and explore and stuff, which work just never tends to allow me to do, but hopefully one day soon. I also, just before the pandemic, was wanting to go to Goa to do my yoga teacher training in India. Goa, India. And the pandemic has caused some issues with that, so I'm hoping in the next couple of years I'll still be able to do that. I'm also probably going to be spending some more time in LA over the next, yeah, 3 years. Can't say what but that's probably what I'll be doing. If I don't do it, cut this out, I'll forget I ever said it. and that will probably be in the next couple of months. And I'm always going, oh, and I'm going to Berlin in 2 weeks.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Travel Minded podcast. You can also find us on Instagram at Travel Minded the podcast. This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Justice Abroad.
Justice Abroad was founded in 2019 and is led by myself, Michael Polak, a trained barrister and expert in international law and assistance. Justice Abroad operates to ensure that people who travel overseas for work or pleasure can be confident that if anything goes wrong, there'll be someone ready to help them. We are seeing an increasing number of cases across the world where people find themselves in trouble and we've been asked to assist. Justice Abroad has a team of top investigators, lawyers around the world, and support staff available to provide unparalleled support. Many people when travelling have an attitude of, it'll never happen to me, and then when something does go wrong, they feel helpless, with nowhere to turn. Anyone travelling for any purpose should be aware of the issues that could arise, and be prepared to get in touch with us should something go wrong. We currently have cases in Greece, China, Thailand, Somalia, Myanmar, Cyprus, Spain, Vietnam, and many other countries around the globe. The increased number of cases which are coming to us proves how frequently travellers can find themselves in trouble, often as a victim of crime or accused of offences they did not commit. Usually, travel insurance will not cover you for assistance and advice with legal problems overseas, and even where they do, the assistance can prove ineffectual and not practical. At Justice Abroad, we have an extremely hands-on approach that allows our clients to feel assured that we will deal with every aspect of their situation and ensure they have the best possible outcome. We're Justice Abroad, and we're here when you need us.